Now, we're going to kick off today with a subject that we think is going to be a feature of this year's national debates, inequality, and what we all know about disenfranchised voters, both here and in the US and the UK, related to inequality. Because the reality is that our income gap is widening. So here on Saturday Extra, we plan to look for some fresh angles on this question. And we're going to kick off with a look at fair pay and the importance of a rules-based system for employment. And this is sparked partly by a piece in the latest issue of The Monthly, which is just out, by Radio National's own Anne Arnold, which looks at the spread of underpayment and exploitation and its broader implications politically. It suggests that in some sectors at least, there's been a cultural shift in this country where ignoring the minimum wage, that is the legal wage, has become the new normal, as has paying off the books, the black economy. I'm joined now by James Pearson, the CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the employers, and by Jim Chalmers, the Shadow Minister for Finance, who's a former Executive Director of the Chifley Research Centre and probably won't mind me describing him as a bit of a policy nerd. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Jim Chalmers, do we have a problem here in Australia? We've been guided historically by the notion of a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. Is that slipping away?
Well, inequality in Australia, Geraldine, is at 75-year highs, which is something that should trouble us all. We want this to be a country where economic growth is inclusive, where hard work is rewarded, and where there's a decent safety net for those at risk of being left behind. And there's enough in recent trends to trouble us that that fair go that we've cherished, that notion of inclusive growth, which we've cherished for so long in this country, is at risk.
And is there a particular area, is it casualisation that you're proposing is contributing?
Well, when it comes to inequality in the labour market, there are a whole series of manifestations. There's the whole sense of casualisation, as you mentioned, the broader field of less secure work. There's more instances coming to light of worker exploitation, which you mentioned in your introduction. There's underpayment. There's record low wages growth. That series has been kept since 1998, and the stats on wages are very troubling. We've got record underemployment, the highest underemployment we've had since 1978 when that stat was first kept. So all of those things combined do create a situation where we do have troubling trends in the labour market, which are feeding through to those inequality measures at 75-year highs.
And does getting paid in cash necessarily disadvantage someone? And many people prefer it.
The cash economy is something which is should trouble everyone who pays their taxes, because underpayment is more likely where cash is involved.
And that has implications for super, doesn't it? I just noticed before Christmas, industry super said there were billions of dollars not being paid each year with employer non-compliance partly due to the cash economy.
Absolutely. There are a whole series of consequences when people aren't playing by the rules in the workplace. Superannuation is one of them, the non-payment or underpayment of the superannuation guarantee. All of these things flow from a situation where a minority of players, businesses, don't do the right thing by their workers.
Now, James Pearson, do you agree that there has been a shift away from a sort of ready adherence to the wages regime set by the employment regulator, the Fair Work Commission, partly prompted by the decline of unions?
Look, there's a separate issue here, and that is we operate under a workplace regulation system nowadays, which has become so complex and so hard for businesses, particularly small businesses who have limited resources, to understand that often now we're seeing that non-compliance with the regulations is born of ignorance and it has just become too difficult. So I don't accept the notion that there is a change in culture, and I like to make it very clear from the outset that if employers are deliberately breaking the law in the manner in which they're engaging staff, then they should be prosecuted to the full extent of that law.
I mean, this question of, in the Monthly, it says, quotes Brian Trippis, a restaurant industry leader and former president of their industry body, estimating that 80% of restaurants and cafes would be paying off the books and probably underpaying. And he actually finds it quite annoying because he says it's people undercutting him on wages.
That's right.
So how significant are those people prepared to undercut? And is it leading to a sort of new normal in attitude that really could lead to disenfranchised voters?
No, I don't see evidence that it's leading to what you call a new normal. Now, I don't have a handle on the exact percentage of people who are not doing the right thing, but we do have some evidence. So, for example, from the Fair Work Ombudsman, which is a well-resourced and effective, in our view, operator in this area, the number of employees where they've gotten involved and achieved a recovery of unpaid wages and the like is fairly static. In fact, if anything, it's declined a bit in the last couple of years, around about 11,000 employees. That equates to a little under 0.1% of Australia's 12 million workers. So I think we need to keep the problem in perspective. I'm not saying that there is a problem out there, and I'm a believer in what former Labor Prime Minister Julia Gillard once said, that sunlight's the best disinfectant. And I think we've seen in recent months how the exposure of practices which are unlawful has resulted in real damage. Well, I always prefer not to speak about specifics, but you've mentioned
franchisees,
them.
Okay.
It's not the only example. And I do believe that large firms, franchisors, who have a very, very big investment in maintaining a strong and positive reputation, they will act, in my experience, and they will act very quickly to fix things up. And it's good to see that's happening. And also it's good to see that government and other bodies have launched a number of inquiries and task forces into this area, and the government too is acting to increase penalties and make it harder through stronger laws for people to do the wrong thing, to make sure they do the right thing.
Do you agree, Jim?
Oh, can I just pick up on something James said then, Geraldine? He said that rightly that sunshine's the best disinfectant, and then he said it's not helpful to mention individual companies. I think some of those scandals which have come to light, whether it be 7-Eleven, whether it be what was attempted at CUB, whether it was what happened at Esso, whether it was what happened at the chicken supplier who tried to get 19-hour shifts at $11.50 an hour, or even this week what's come out about the evidence about Pizza Hut severely underpaying its workers by reclassifying them wrongly as independent contractors. All of these examples, when they come to light, they do serve a very useful purpose. Partly, they act as a deterrent from businesses who are tempted to do the wrong thing. But they also show that the more that we put these cases out there, the more people understand that these contracts, or maybe it's the role of a labour hire company or whatever it is, these are things that are going on in our workplaces which are wrong, and the companies who engage in these practices should be named. For the people who are outside the system, people, as you mentioned in that monthly article, who might be new migrants or others who are being exploited, they're being treated badly outside the boundaries of the industrial relations system, and that's a problem that needs addressing. One of the things that's happening here is the use of labour hire companies. Again, not all of them are dodgy, but some of them are dodgy, and they give some employers an excuse to offer the same workers doing the same work dramatically reduced conditions. That's what we saw almost happen at CUB with the 65% pay cut. We've seen it in other examples, including some of those that I mentioned before. And so we do need to ensure that the Ombudsman is empowered. We do need to make sure that there's a national licensing regime for labour hire firms, because that is one of the problems that has emerged, which is really exacerbating and accelerating some of the trends that we're concerned about.
Let me just tell listeners that you're listening to Jim Chalmers, who's the Shadow Minister for Finance, and James Pearson, who's the CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And we're discussing underpayment and whether there's a sort of a trend underway that is starting to eat away at a lot of our nostrums and understandings about a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. Where do penalty rates fit into this discussion, would you say, James?
Well, penalty rates are a subject of considerable debate. I noticed the Leader of the Opposition just a few days ago, in fact, was speaking on the issue in advance of the industrial umpire, the Fair Work Commission's decision, which is expected to be handed down on the matter sometime in the next few weeks. No less a body than the Independent Productivity Commission, amongst others, has identified that penalty rates are a barrier to increasing employment. And one of the concerns I have is that while it's right to talk about the conditions of work and the situation of employed people, what about the 750,000 of Australians who currently don't have a job and are looking for work? And what about the 250,000 of young men and women in our country who are in that position. And penalty rates are part of the problem that's making it harder, not easier, for employers to give jobs to these people. It's important to remember that in Australia, more than 4 out of 5 jobs in this country are actually provided by the private sector. So any sensible approach to addressing unemployment has got to address making it easier, not harder, for the private sector to employ more people. Now,
Can I just read you, Andrew Lee, who's a colleague of Jim Chalmers, just put it in a very good speech that he gave just before Christmas. Cut weekend and holiday loadings and you'll make the nation less equal. If you love Australian egalitarianism, one simple way to defend it is to support lower paid workers getting a bit extra for working when everyone else is on holiday. You know, James, it's pretty arresting, that.
Well, you know, Geraldine, that what we've put to the Fair Work Commission is not about cutting, let alone abolishing, penalty rates, as has been misreported in a number of places, not necessarily by the ABC, but it's certainly an accusation made by some in the debate. All we're looking for is to do this. We're looking to harmonise across the weekend Saturday and Sunday rates of pay so that penalty rates on Sundays, which generally speaking are double time, are brought in line with penalty rates on Saturdays, which generally speaking are time and a half. Now, that is not, by anyone's measure, a radical change. And I really don't think, as a proud Australian citizen, that that is going to make a really serious difference,
Jim,
to equality in our country. But it will help generate more employment. And our members have told us that around about half of the companies who currently operate on Sundays will hire more people, and about half of the companies which currently can't afford to operate on Sundays will open their doors. That means more jobs for more Australians. That sounds like a fair go to me.
James, I don't think you're being upfront with the listeners this morning. I mean, you say that this is not about cutting penalty rates, but you're saying that if wages were lower, people would put on more people. There's a logical disconnect there. You use words like harmonise. You've used words before in your media material like adjust penalty rates. But for the hundreds of thousands of Australians who rely on penalty rates, not as a luxury, but to put food on the table as compensation for working when other people are putting their feet up, I think it's important that the real nature of this agenda is put out there for people to evaluate. It's not about harmonisation. It's not about adjustment. It's about cutting penalty rates. And I think the more that you're honest about that, like the 60 or so
Liberal Party members, you think even the Saturday, you're saying, Jim Chalmers?
No, James's argument is that there won't be a cut to Sunday penalty rates because it's all about harmonising with Saturday penalty rates.
I'm saying that Sunday rates, our argument is to lower Sunday rates. So
there is a loss to the workers, you say, James, but the benefit is more work offered. Is that what you're saying?
More work offered. So there are more hours available for people who choose, won't be forced, but who choose to work more hours if they want them, and more jobs available for those who would like to work at the weekend, including on Sunday, but at the moment don't have the job opportunity to do that.
This whole argument that cutting wages creates jobs has been thoroughly discredited, not just in Australia but around the world, where people
It can't be completely wrong, though, Jim.
Well, where people understand that the less equal an economy is, the bigger threat to economic growth that is, we need to make sure when we're talking about things like demand in our economy and spending power in our economy and all of those important things that keeps growth ticking over, that people on low and middle incomes have the capacity to spend in our economy. This whole idea that if you cut wages or even, by the way, if you give a big corporate tax cut, that all of a sudden it will flow through to all these extra jobs is not backed up by the evidence here and around the world.
Well, on the corporate tax cut issue, I do have to differ with what Jim says, is because Treasury's own research demonstrates that some 2/3 of the benefit of that proposed tax cut will flow to households and families. Now, Jim's right in the sense that employers don't want to see less demand in the economy, quite the reverse. We are very keen to see more demand in the economy, and we believe very strongly that having more people employed is a great way of generating more demand. We would like to see workers getting reasonable wage increases. We'd like to see sustainable increases in living standards because that's good for the private sector as it's good for the people in Australia who consume the goods and services that the private sector produces. But what we're wrestling with at the moment is a set of workplace regulations that make it too difficult, particularly for smaller
businesses. And are you talking about minimum wage there
hire.
As well, or are you just talking about penalty rates?
Well, look, on minimum wage, let's recognise that Australia has one of the highest minimum wages in the world, and we have one of the strongest safety nets, social safety nets in the world, and we have a progressive tax system. And the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry is not looking to change those things. Those are part of the things that make Australia one of the best places in the world in which to live. But it's also time for us to recognise that unless we are more productive as a nation, and that means our bosses and our workers are better at what they do, and we free them up, we give them more flexibility to actually get out there and produce more for each dollar invested and each hour of work worked, we are going to fall further and further behind in that ruthless competition with other countries in the world who are lifting their own people out of poverty and who are increasingly able to compete with us for the production and provision of goods and services, many of which Australians are able to consume, and is one of the reasons, in fact, that globalisation, why the costs of living in Australia have been under downward pressure, and Australia's have a higher standard of living than they have for many years.
It sounds as if that whole notion of inclusive growth, Jim Chalmers, which I know is very much modern Labor's big mantra, it struggles to be fully grasped. Would you say or not?
The concept?
Yes.
I think people understand the concept, whatever title you want to attach to it. I think people do appreciate in Australia that one of the things we can be most proud of over our history is that when we grow, we try and grow together. We try and grow in an inclusive way. It really means that the benefits of economic growth are fairly shared so that there is a decent safety net for those at risk of being left behind. And all of these industrial relations, institutions and policies like a minimum wage, like penalty rates, all of those sorts of things, they're fundamental to what it has been in Australia, which has made us fairer than around the world. But what we want to do is ensure that the fair go and inclusive growth is part of our future and not just part of our past.
Well, Jim Chalmers and James Pearson, thank you for kicking us off this year. I feel sure that this will be a version of a debate we'll have many times. Thanks for your time.
Real pleasure. Thanks to you both.
Thank you both.
And Jim Chalmers, Shadow Minister for Finance, has written very interestingly on this. James Pearson, the CEO of the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And as I said, throughout the year, we're going to attempt to look for some fresh ways into this discussion around inequality so that we're not just, we're sort of teasing out some of the nuances of this, which might be playing into our politics.